Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
Today we're chatting with Sophie Peel about her cover story this week, Rise from Chaos, which breaks down exactly what is going on behind the scenes as City Hall prepares to be, metaphorically, reduced to ash, as per the wishes of Portlanders who voted overwhelmingly last fall to just absolutely freaking overhaul the government. Which, yeah, most of us agree is very necessary, but what we voted to do is wild, and we are heading into uncharted territory, so buckle up. It's Saturday, September 16th, and this is episode 141 of The Dive. Not only is Portland city government gearing up for a big pivot, The Dive is gearing up for a hiatus of its own. You may have heard me mention a couple times that I wrote a book. It's called Altogether Different, and it's going to be out in stores on October 17th. There'll be a big launch event at Powell's on November 8th, and of course, you are all invited. I'm telling you, you, Mary, Susan, Jerome, Gregory, Petunia? You're all invited! You know, podcaster's not even my job. And it is not journalist, which is a common misconception. Because actually, my job is just book. So let's kick off the countdown to my big pivot with my anti-penultimate guest, Sophie Peel, who will dish on what level of chaos we might expect come election season. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Lucas Manfield reports that in June, Oregon lawmakers passed House Bill 2645, criminalizing possessions of small amounts of fentanyl as a way to curb public consumption. The law introduced a misdemeanor for possession of at least 1 gram or 5 user units containing detectable amounts of fentanyl. Portland cops have used it sparingly so far. Charges referred to Multnomah County District Attorney by police agencies have only happened 4 times. Last week, prosecutors filed charges for all of them, but in half the cases, the charges were paired with more serious crimes. Sophie Peel reports Representative Val Hoyle, while serving as Oregon Labor Commissioner, used personal devices to discuss at least some state business and is now resisting handing over those devices for inspection. Sophie Peel reports Representative Val Hoyle, while serving as Oregon Labor Commissioner, used personal devices to discuss at least some state business and is now resisting handing over those devices for inspection. In recent emails obtained by WW, Hoyle tells the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which she led from 2019 to the beginning of 2023, that she will produce the records herself, with the assistance of her attorney, even though Boley officials have made it clear that it would be much swifter for the agency to scour the devices since they have the relevant software. Anthony Effinger reports, Oregon Health and Science University, the medical behemoth that aims to take over rival Legacy Health, recently polled over 19,000 employees about their jobs. One of the questions asked was, would you stay at OHSU if offered a position similar to yours at a different hospital? Only 54 said definitively that they would. 44% said they had confidence in senior management's leadership, but a third were neutral on that question, and another third had unfavorable opinions. In April, the Portland Business Journal reported that 27 department chairs at the OHSU School of Medicine took an informal poll, asking if they thought the university's board of directors should reappoint President Dr. Danny Jacobs. 26 of the 27 said no. Together, these two polls raise questions about whether OHSU is equipped to absorb Legacy's 14,000 workers and become the Portland metropolitan area's biggest employer, with some 32,000 doctors, nurses, and other staff, 10 hospitals, and 3 million patient visits per year. Now let's catch up with Sophie Peel about her cover story, Rise from Chaos.
So where we're at right now with the transition is, I guess we're undergoing the transition. There's a lot of work right now within the city of sort of figuring out how, you know, who's going to be responsible for what, how are we going to reorganize basically the city structure to make sure we can still deliver these services, but now under a city administrator. The future city council is only going to make policy. So right now in our form of government, we've got 5 city council members that double both as policymakers and as managers of bureaus and a bunch of city employees. And that's been blamed for sort of a lot of inefficiencies and, you know, kind of fiefdoms and territorialism. So under this new form of government, 12 city council people are only going to be making policy. So that's sort of where we're at in transition land.
That city administrator, is that, we don't vote for that person, right? Is that person appointed?
That's appointed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
think that is the one thing that nobody is talking about right now, but it is so interesting. And I think it's going to be kind of pivotal. I mean, if the future mayor appoints someone who has no managerial experience, no administrative experience, it's going to be really bad. So I'm very curious to see one. I mean, the other thing too is I wonder who would want that job. It's a huge job. They're not going to get paid what they would get paid working as a top admin person at Nike or Fred Meyers or wherever, where they'd get paid, you know, $500,000. Here, they're probably going to get paid, you know, at most $150,000. Mm-hmm. So I am very curious to see who throws their, you know, name in the ring for that one.
No names are emerging yet for the administrative role?
Not that I've heard of. I imagine, though, because it's not an elected position, that those discussions are happening very much in, like, a quiet manner. Because, you know, you don't have to announce that you're vying for the city administrator role. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe people will come out in that way. But I imagine that that's going to be a process that's sort of done behind closed doors.
How are, like, political strategists, kingmaker types, what is that scene looking like right now?
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, the past 3 weeks, I've talked to, I think, over 20 political strategists and campaign managers and people who just have been really influential in city and state politics, for that matter, for, you know, decades. And this, when we overhauled the city's form of government, I mean, they just tossed out, it tossed out sort of all these playbooks that these campaign managers and strategists have used for many, many years to get people elected. And they're kind of starting from scratch. You know, these people that have been doing this for decades and know this like the back of their hand, they're having to talk like really rudimentary strategy. They're having to talk about, do we want to, you know, sort of pinpoint certain districts where we think the voter sentiment will be better for moderates or better for progressives? Do we want to run slates of candidates where they sort of link arms, they campaign together, they boost each other? Or if there's, you know, 3 moderate business candidates, do we want to pick one of them and say, hey, everyone vote for this guy? Don't vote for the other two, because we know there's only an appetite for one moderate business candidate. And because it's ranked choice voting, you know, we don't want, I mean, there's so many weird things that happen with ranked choice voting and multi-member districts. Like there's so many, there's like possibilities to the nth degree of how mm-hmm. that could work out.
Yeah.
So, and there's sort of 3 factions emerging behind the scenes. And it's interesting because a lot of the people I talk to would argue that like, it's too soon to talk about strategy, to talk about coalition form. You know, they really, some of them really downplayed sort of what was happening behind the scenes, but I don't think it should be downplayed. I mean, these people are, this is what they do. This is their job. And so they're not taking this lightly and they're not having no discussions behind the scenes. So anyways, there is the Portland Metro Chamber, which most people know it as the Portland Business Alliance. They just recently rebranded a couple months ago, but they hired a guy named Doug Moore, who is a long time, he ran the Oregon League of Conservation Voters for about a decade and really turned it from sort of a nobody group into a total political powerhouse with a lot of lobbying power. The Metro Chamber hired him this spring, basically, to figure out how to get moderate candidates on the city council. And so that guy's name is Doug Moore, and he's well underway with, you know, creating a 501c3, 501c4, and also a political action committee to sort of do a combination of things to get these moderates on council. That's going to include sort of soft recruitment of candidates. It's going to include a form of a training academy, sort of, you know, for these candidates that they want to back. And then there's absolutely going to be, you know, political backing and money behind it and endorsements. And so they've kind of got a whole plan. And with the PBA, or, you know, Doug Moore's coalition, he's arguing that, not arguing, he's saying that he wants to make this a broader coalition than business has normally had for elections. So he's saying, you know, I've been inviting labor, I've been inviting progressive groups to kind of join this coalition. My best guess is that despite those efforts, it's going to turn into primarily a business group, kind of with the frequent flyers. I think it's really to be seen if this new form of government breaks down political kind of divisions and walls. But my guess is, even if it does a little bit, it's not going to mean that, you know, a racial justice organization is going to link arms with the Portland Metro Chamber. You know, I just don't see a world in which that happens. So there's Doug Moore's coalition, which is really Portland Metro Chamber. And then there's a sort of labor coalition that is, I wouldn't call it a coalition yet, but, you know, labor unions in the city and state have often, the big labor unions have often kind of walked in lockstep for elections as far as endorsements, as far as, you know, backing candidates, whether it's in the gubernatorial race or sort of state senators, state representatives. So there's absolutely, you know, the big labor unions are talking to each other about how they want to win council seats. And then there's sort of this tenuous alliance maybe between some of the racial justice and social justice nonprofits and labor. So there was a July meeting that labor convened, and they brought in Oregon Futures Lab, which has become sort of a fairly influential social justice, you know, nonprofit and sort of think tank, and then also the Coalition of Communities of Color, which is sort of another, you know, has kind of become a powerhouse in its own right. So they invited representatives from those two organizations. And during that meeting, my understanding of what's happened is basically they were trying to figure out, while being very careful about it, is it possible for us to be a coalition? Like, is it possible for us to maybe do joint endorsements or at least get on the same page of a few things so we can back some of the same candidates? Because they know the business coalition's no joke. Yeah. That's been a coalition that has been incredibly powerful in whatever iteration it's been over the years. Mm-hmm. So labor, I think, knows we are stronger if we can have some form of coalition with these nonprofit organizations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, labor and these nonprofits historically, in local elections especially, have not walked in lockstep. They have not agreed on local politicians. I think that's what I am most curious to see how that shakes out, is whether they can form kind of like a firewall to prevent business from kind of steamrolling them.
Yeah.
Especially with the voters' appetite right now. I mean, I don't know, Portland voters sort of, they do things that might seem kind of in contrast to each other. You know, like they voted in Renee Gonzalez versus Joanne Hardesty. But then they also voted for charter reform, which its whole aim, you know, its sort of whole branding was, we're going to increase the diversity of city council. So, but I will say, I think Portlanders right now are more apt to vote for kind of get it done, businessy, moderate candidates than they are for really left progressive. So I think labor and kind of the nonprofits, I think they get that. So whether that coalition forms in any way or whether they can do that, I think I'm really interested to see how that works out.
Are there any candidates that have risen above the fray yet?
I don't know if they've risen above the fray. There's candidates. there's 12 official declared candidates, which is really amazing, seeing as we're 14 months away from the election. I think that's like a lot. So there's going to be a lot more. Most of the ones who have declared right now are fairly young. They're pretty progressive. They're kind of no names. You know, they don't have a lot of name recognition, which I think is probably why, at least part of the reason why they've declared so early is because they don't feel like they have name recognition. And, you know, the more humans are simple creatures. So the more times you can get your name in front of someone, the more they're going to associate you with, you know, whatever. There's a whole psychology behind it, I would imagine. But, so, yeah, I mean, there's a couple ones of note. I would say the ones that are a little bit, might have a little bit more name recognition are Robin Yee, who's chief of staff to Representative Con Pham, who represents sort of a swath of East Portland. She may be the most progressive representative in the Oregon legislature, and he is her chief of staff. Before that, he was the political director for Apano, which formally they changed their name just to Apano, a fairly large nonprofit here in town. So I would say he's got a little bit more name recognition than the others. The other person I would point out is a woman named Steph Rouse, who's a longtime transportation advocate, has worked both, you know, within the city in transportation and then also sort of outside of the city with a number of groups. She sat on advisory groups for transportation. And she is vying for a seat in East Portland. So that's District 1, which is the furthest east geographic district. So I would say those two are probably the two that at this point have the most name recognition. But even they, I wouldn't say have a ton.
Yeah, we've got time.
We've got time.
It really like muddies the waters to imagine what's happening behind the scenes, because there are candidates yet to be plucked and people that are probably sitting in positions that will be plucked. It's a lot to think about. It's chaos.
Yeah, it's chaos.
Were you surprised to hear that Mayor Wheeler was not going to run for a third term?
Man, we've been hearing for months from people close to him that he wasn't going to run.
It was not a surprise then.
But then I get a call from someone on Tuesday, 3 hours before we go to publication, who said, oh, I hear he might be announcing that he is running tomorrow. So then I freaked out, and we sort of softened, because we were essentially going to try to kind of soft break the news in this story about, hey, Wheeler's probably not going to run. He's been telling people for months he's not going to run. Mm-hmm. We sort of softened that stance based on that one person who turned out to be very wrong, which is okay. I wasn't surprised. I was a little bummed that he decided to make the announcement, you know, because we obviously had asked him.
Yeah.
You know, 4 hours after we published, he said he's not going to run. But that's all right.
That's petty. He's just petty.
That's okay. That's okay. It's his life.
That's true. Yes, yes. He's on his own path now. Who else is making noise about running for mayor?
Commissioner Mingus Maps is running. He's the only one that's declared so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's strongly rumored that Commissioner Carmen Rubio is going to run for mayor. And then it sounds like Commissioner Renee Gonzalez is still on the fence about whether to run for mayor, city council. Same with Commissioner Dan Ryan. Mm. So that covers all of council. And then there's a couple, the former Multnomah County Sheriff Mike Reese, it's rumored that he's thinking about it. So those are the names I would say are rumored right now.
One name that came up in the story that I wanted to bring up was Sarah Iannarone.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of half expected to hear a candidacy announcement from her.
She told me unequivocally she is not running for mayor and she is not running for city council.
Oh.
Which I think a lot of people were surprised I was a little surprised to hear about it.
Yeah.
You know, she is sort of very much in this progressive camp. As many people know, she almost beat out Mayor Wheeler in 2020 for Portland mayor, but there was a write-in candidate, which had it not been for the write-in candidate and how many votes that woman got, you know, Sarah would have been our mayor. Anyways, this spring she, you know, there was a lot of press around a candidate training school that she was going to launch for city council candidates that was going to be very progressive and and then it was supposed to commence in July, and then the person who sort of was going to spearhead that training academy with her, he had been Greg McKelvey. He had also been her her campaign manager in 2020, but he came down with some, you know, severe health issues, and so Sarah says that's why they canceled the training academy in July, which I think a lot of the other progressive groups felt like that had sort of killed momentum a little bit. It sounds like they had sort of maybe halted their own training efforts because they, you know, figured hers was going to get a lot of traction. This was great. This was sort of a point of unification. Anyway, Sarah says the training academy is going to launch again in October. So that's where she's at with it. I mean, according to her, she's staying behind the scenes on this one.
You know what? That's smart, because that is where the real players play, right? Behind the scenes. There are people pulling the strings. She knows.
She knows.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Sophie Peel, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week for the penultimate episode of The Dive. Bye.